Welcome to Trust the Problem. This is Patricia Sun, and today will be, I'm sad to say, but it's not really too bad, the last day here at Contact Talk Radio, and they've been so kind to me, so helpful, and I don't want anyone to feel bad or disappointed because I will be able to do what I'm calling a suncast from my website. So from now on, if you'd like to hear me on a regular basis, we believe we'll be doing it once a week, and you can listen any time. And so you're not nailed down to one time, but I will be doing an hour show, and it will be Trust the Problem, and it'll still be here, so no one need feel bad. And we'll just make it work. So one of the ways for you to be in touch with me, it's like, you know, trust the problem. We've had a problem, and it has nothing to do with Contact Talk Radio. They've been just lovely. The issue is, though, that I need support, I need the listeners, and I need to have your email addresses to know that you're listening. So if you go to patriciasun.com and just send me an email, it's at ps@patriciasun.com, and then we'll know you're interested, and you can ask me questions, and we'll just keep it cooking. We'll stay in touch. There'll be no loss. And, you know, that's just the problem, and maybe it'll build and lead to something else. So I just wanted to thank everyone who sent emails of disappointment when they didn't hear me last week and the week before. Again, it was not Contact, it was talk radio. It was I had some health problems and I had to be away, but I'm fine now. And so things are looking good. So I just wanted to encourage everyone to stay in connection, to keep listening, send me the issues, the problems that interest you, that seem meaningful and real, and that's what I want to address. And, of course, I was so sorry to have missed Thanksgiving because I wanted to talk. I had so many emails people about Thanksgiving, but this is not on for Thanksgiving. because, of course, those of you who know me know that being grateful is a great power, especially when we're depressed or faced with injustices or difficulties or, you know, the hassles of life that come and go up and down, sort of how life is. And when we can remember what we are grateful for, it's a great power. It makes you sane, frankly. It makes your brain work in a different way. So what I really want to talk to you about today is not only the gratitude, but also the mystical heritage that's within every religion. You know, we're coming up to Christmas and Hanukkah and Ramadan has been, and we want to respect the beautiful parts of all the religions. It, you know, to be a believer, to have faith, does not at all necessarily, and often maybe necessarily doesn't mean being ideological. It has to do with heart. It has to do with love and compassion, connecting to God, connecting to spirit, connecting to the divine radiance, you know, that juice of life. That's what I used to say in my workshops all the time, even before Joseph Campbell used to talk about follow your bliss. I used to say, follow the juice. Follow where life is juicy. Follow where things fill you. And, you know, if we learn to do that, we won't feel guilty or angry or disappointed when things don't go the way we think they should have. They don't go the way we thought they were supposed to or the way we envisioned would be so helpful. And sometimes it's true, it would have been helpful the way you envisioned. But sometimes there's a bigger possibility. And you cannot see it from where you are, from where you're standing. And you have to trust the flow. And the only way that I know to keep being encouraging to people about the reality of trusting the flow, is to listen to what gives you that juice, to listen what makes your heart sing, to listen to what lightens you, what makes you see things clearly, with depth, with compassion, with purpose, with meaning. And often the great cruelties of this world come from people being just frightened, short-sighted, and using their energy in a way that they think is making it better, but is causing great harm. And so people might say, well, how do you know? How do you know which that is? Well, you know, because if you check being on the other side of the receiving end of your actions, does it, you know, they may not like it, they may not want it, but does it harm them? And if you are checking out how you rise you up, how you raise yourself, does it entail really just putting someone else down? And, of course, that doesn't work. It has to be that even people who have been unjust to you, and we've all had that experience, and it's shocking and it hurts. I do believe that human beings really have a kind of justice gene. And that justice gene is connected to God. It's connected to the universe, if you will, the consciousness of the universe. And it's what does drive us and causes some aspects of guilt. Now, some aspects of guilt come from poor conditioning and, again, short-sightedness and injury in our animal selves. You know, I always have a little trouble talking about this, which I think is an important part of the whole thing that I'm trying to say today. And it's been coming up to my mind. I've seen it on the news and in the, it just seems to be such an issue that we make animals, I mean, if they, oh, he or she was such an animal, they were just animal-like, or you treat me like an animal, or you know, we have all these expressions that come from the past where we make animals things, where we make them stock, you know, live stock, like bolts of cloth of stock on a shelf. And they're alive and they feel, and they're mammals, most of them, and they know, and they're very like us. And we know if you have had a pet that you love, you've lived with, you know they read you. They know. They know how you're feeling. They know when you're sick. They know when you're sad. They know when you're excited. They know. They know when you're mad at them. They know when you love them. Well, part of this justice gene that humans have comes, I believe, from another capacity we have, which is to remember consequences, and not just consequences of, like all animals, especially mammals, have about remembering, well, that was a poisonous plant, or well, that shadow means a hawk might get us, or, you know, memory of past things to watch out for life. Everything tries to stay alive. It's not that kind of memory. We have an extrapolation, imagination, intuitive mind capacity to add to the picture, to suppose many possibilities out of one past experience, to converge many past experiences into a new creation, a new insight, a new understanding, a new possibility that never happened to you before. And that intuitive wisdom, that intuitive power, is really part of our, and as I started to say, it's part of our greater intelligence, which of course it is. Animals have intuition, so it's not like it's exclusive to us. But the version, the extent, the depth, the dimension of logic and intuition that when matured and not built around merely surviving, but using this magnificent brain we have for the intelligence to solve problems, to become creative, and why? To what end? To follow that juice, to follow that joy, to follow that conscience, that insight that says, inspiration. This is a good thing. This is a wholesome thing to do. Whenever we follow that, whenever we let that leak into, no matter how depressed or sad or judgmental we are, it pulls us out of it. And I believe that's the teaching of Christ. It's the meaning even of Hanukkah, of redemption, rebuilding, using the magic of love and life and God and spirit and inspiration, using that to make us more wise, to make us more compassionate, to make us more loving, to make us more healthy. And Islam talks about this. Christianity talks about this. Judaism talks about this. All the monotheistic religions. The Hindus talk about it with their many gods. And what they have is they have gods split up into many parts that all process these different pieces. But the essence is always down, like in Hinduism, the great soul, the one soul that we're all part of, that the soul in me salutes the soul in you. Namaste, the God in me salutes the God in you. These deep, ancient, always present in human experience through the millennia are insights from our intuitive mind that we know are true. We corrupt it through our fear. We corrupt it through our immaturity. We corrupt it through our immature logical mind and immature intuitive mind, where we're just trying to control things, control people, control outcomes, gain dominance. All that stuff is such a waste of time. I mean, it's all right to make plans and to build structure and even make rules to support when you don't know what to do. But we have to keep in mind, to be mature, that rules are there to serve goodness, not to be just followed. Anybody can make up a rule. And they can be foolish rules. Or they can be good rules under certain circumstances. And horrific, the very same rule, under another circumstance. So just following rules is not the solution, though sometimes it's helpful. I'm not saying that. But we have to think bigger than that. There's a very famous bumper sticker that's all through Northern California, I think. It's very common, maybe one of the most common. It's question authority. And the reason for questioning authority is not just to be belligerent or to be an anarchist, but to question someone who says they're an authority, someone who's taken a role as an authority. Think for yourself is what it's saying. It's not saying fight against all authority. Of course not. Only that which does not seem good. And that actually is your duty. That's part of being a citizen in a democracy. And, you know, I have so many lovely quotes. I don't even have them all with me here today, and I will bring them up again in the future. Thomas Jefferson and Lincoln, two of my favorites. And they were so precognitive, so prescient. They knew. They had intuition, and they had logic, and they had information. Because, you know, you need to be educated. You can have an intelligent brain, but keep it ignorant, and it will operate shallowly. And you will even use that great intelligence trying to enforce the shallowness. And we have a lot of people in politics like that these days, where they almost on purpose keep themselves ignorant so that they can make bargains for power and money. And, you know, that's what it is. And I have this quote. It's just sitting, it's burning a hole looking at me. And it's on my website, by the way. I'm going to push my website quite a bit today, more than I ever do, because I want you to find me again. It's patriciasun.com, patriciasun.com. And to send me an email is ps@patriciasun.com. And you can find this quote under Lincoln. Let's go to the front page there. I have a little bar there that has Jefferson and Washington, Jefferson, and Lincoln. But here's this quote that I found a long time ago, actually, and it struck me so deeply. And he says, it's in a letter to someone, as the war was beginning, I think it was. He says, I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. Even that one first sentence is so like today, isn't it? There's a crisis approaching that unnerves us all and makes us worried for our safety. And not only our individual human safety, but the safety of the country, safety of the democracy, the fixing of elections, I think predominantly Republican because they had the power, but I think in some cases Democrats have done it too. Way too much fixing of elections. You know, Diebold being a supporter of the president, having millions and millions and millions of dollars of contracts. I really recommend to you seeing a documentary called Hacking Democracy. Very sweet, very human, very real, very straight out reporting, something a reporter should have done instead of a grandmother who wondered what's going on, which is what it is, a wonderful woman who just kept following the common sense questions and asking them and didn't go into la-la land and say, oh, everything is fine. Said, no, it doesn't feel fine. So part of being awake and living this next level of life is telling the truth and having knowledge. You have to have the knowledge. And, of course, when our media is owned by corporations, you're going to get very selected information and you're not going to have the knowledge you need to have. So back to the quote from Lincoln. I'm going to repeat the first sentence again. It's just the first sentence. I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. As a result of the war, corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption in high places will follow. And the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until all wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. Wow, huh? He continues, I feel at this moment more anxiety for the safety of my country than ever before. Even in the midst of war, God grant my suspicions may prove groundless. Well, they weren't groundless. They're universal truths. Happen through societies and cultures for as long as we've had organized culture. And so that doesn't mean that it's inevitable. That it's been that way is because we've been immature. That it can change is absolutely the reason for the problem. We are maturing in our ability to keep seeing this problem. That there is such a thing as justice. There is such a thing as love your neighbor and being your brother's keeper, as Cain asks of God after he kills Abel because he's jealous. Jealous that God loves Abel because he's Abel. What a metaphor. Primal. The children of the first two human beings kill. One kills the other out of envy, out of frustration about not knowing how to please God. Stop and think about that. What a metaphor, huh? And, you know, all the three monotheistic religions, that's their story. That's their That's their, what shall I call it? I was going to say heritage. That's their insight from thousands of years of human nature and a metaphor to reveal it, to state it, to make us look at it. It's terribly important. And God doesn't punish Cain, doesn't kill him. He actually puts a mark on him to protect him so other people won't kill him. But of course it was the first death. So the whole idea of killing, which has been so much the biggest dysfunction of our species, is that we kill each other. It's addressing that, and that it's rooted in insecurity, in weakness, and in not knowing how to please God, how to do what's good, and to feel all right about trying to find out. And God gives him a chance to go out in the world and build a city, first city, and find out. And it's interesting because cities have so much corruption in them. It's like whenever we get really together, if we're alone, we're too lonely. If we get all together, we have all this garbage comes up. Well, I used to say just about relationships. Purpose of relationship, first of all, is to relate. And when you lie and don't relate, you don't have the relationship. You break it. And the other reason is that we are drawn together because of love. So people fall in love because they have love. But they're also drawn together because they have matching garbage. And matching garbage exists to create a problem. A problem that will make us grow. A problem that will make us look at ourselves. Will make us look at what we're doing. Make us look at what's been done. Make us look at how's it going. Is it working for us? Is it doing what we hoped it would do? The way we treat our children, the jobs we have, how we support one another. It's to look at it. It's to grow. And to find that juice again. To find what makes your heart light. And follow it. Now, one of the things I wanted to cover today, apropos to all of this, too, is that when people get depressed, and I have often said that we need to allow some room for reality-based depression, because our animal bodies, getting back to the animal body, that we are animals, even though we hate to use that term and for all the reasons I said before, we are biological beings with lots of extra pluses, but nonetheless, we're living in a living planet filled with life that lives off and from and through each other, and we need it, and it's a wonder. It's a miracle. It's God expressing itself. And life is very important. Respect for life, that life lives and dies and keeps moving, keeps changing, is a fact we're becoming more and more aware of. We used to think everything was static. It was just how we saw it. The world begins with us. When we're born, this is the beginning of everything. And, of course, we're realizing now, and now we have video and movies and newscasts and we now have history that we can really look and see what people actually said and did and not how it was rewritten to accommodate a delusion. I mean, imagine if we could have heard Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin and Adams and Madison all discussing the problem and Washington's farewell address, and we could have heard him, could have heard what he emphasized, heard what they talked about, seen their humanness, seen that they weren't perfect. One of the things that we tend to do with old-style thinking that's immature with the lineal mind is we make things all or nothing at all. We make it all perfect, all wonderful, or all awful. And one of the saddest things we're doing in this wonderful holy season time is still believing that some religion or another, you know, some people don't believe in any religions because they see all the bloodiness through the centuries all of them have done. Christianity, you know, the Inquisition, the Crusades, you know, burning witches at the stake, torturing people. Christianity, you know, has been crazy through time. Islam has been crazy through time. Judaism has been crazy through time. Human beings have been crazy through time. That's what makes it crazy. We do. People do. And what we need to, that doesn't mean, though, that we throw the treasures out with the dysfunctions. We trust that problem. We look at it. We try to sort it out. And the truth is that Islam is no more bloody than Christianity or Judaism ever has been or ever will be. I mean, I guess I take back the ever will be, because the ever will be I'm referring to is as all human beings discover, all will improve. And so we will all improve. But it has nothing to do with race or religion, the way we've simplistically broken things up. There are wondrously good people, black, white, Asian. There's devastatingly cool people, black, white, Asian. Devastatingly crazy people, black, white, Asian. It has nothing to do with black, white, Asian. It has to do with human beings and their, I call it their growing edge. The edge as they participate in life, and when they're dysfunctional, when they won't trust problems, when they won't trust goodness, when they won't trust God, when they won't follow the juice, when they won't do what's good, and, you know, the definition's often been, what's good is what you do when no one's watching. You know, if you do the same goodness, if no one will know, then you're being good. But the truth of the matter is, there's really wonderfully good people who've also done things that are not so good. And there's people who've done terribly bad things who are also done things that are wonderfully good. And it's very hard for us. We like to make it neat. We want to box it up. And of course, there are people who do much more good than bad in the world, and people who do much more bad than good. And those are how we basically, you know, categorize. I realize that. But it's still not really the focal point. One of the things I said for years about the fall, I believe the last, you know, the first fall was the first evolutionary leap, when we fell from paradise and everything got black and white and judgmental because we ate from the tree of good and evil. And we got so judgmental and brought it so much cruelty. But the truth of the matter is, there's good, and then there's that stuff that's becoming good. And that's what I'll talk about when we come back. We're going to take a little break. We're about at the half hour here. And I'm Patricia Sun. You're listening to Trust the Problem. And you can listen to it on a, I call them Suncasts, not podcasts, Suncasts, on my website, patriciasun.com. So we'll take a little break. We'll be right back. A little problem there. We're not breaking just yet. Okay. But when we do take this break, when we come back from the break, it'll come up soon. But what I am going to talk about is that rest of the stuff that's becoming good. It's a much, much healthier way to look at injustice, difficulties, things that people do that are mistaken, that are wrong, that are harmful. Instead of just looking at it as good and evil, we're going to look at it as there's good, and we know what that is. It always feels good. And then there's that stuff that doesn't feel so good. That's trying to become good. When we use our intelligence to look at things in that way, we are free from the judgmental, really, cruelty. So that's what we want to focus on. Look at that, because that's the source of real power for us all. We're taking the break now. We'll be right back.
Trust the Problem is sponsored by a nonprofit organization, the Institute of Communication for Understanding, ICU. We rely on you, our listeners, for donations to keep us on the air. To help, please visit patriciasun.com and receive a free Can't Take Sides When You Know the Earth is Round t-shirt with your donation. Thank you.
Connections, that's my old radio show. Maybe someday I'll be doing that again too, because you know, trusting problems really is about finding the connections. Finding the connections is so powerful. It expands us. It causes us to become more. And that's why we have to have problems. All life has problems. Little mice that live by the edge of a brook, that when the rains come and the overflows. I remember seeing this on a nature program. This little mouse with her little babies, she just scurried up to higher ground and brought them all up one by one and built a new nest in a safer place. And, you know, she didn't wring her hands. She didn't blame God. She didn't get mad at the river. She just took care of business and moved. And it's life. And when we can see ourselves that way, we will have reached a whole new level. And the difficulty of seeing ourselves, there's a kind of rancidness about that can happen to anger when we hold on to it. It gets degenerate. It gets ugly. It gets stale. It does something that's not right. And we do have to hold on to our angers until we take action, because anger is there to make you take an action. And often we don't know what action to take. And often when people are angry, they just vent their anger and, you know, clobber somebody, or, you know, figuratively or literally, steal from someone, con someone, yell at someone, brutalize someone. They vent. And we all know that that doesn't work. That only causes more harm. It just doesn't work. So the discoveries of Jesus, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, actualizing the power of love, facing it, even if it gets you killed, well, we're all going to die anyway, so, you know, it's one way. And people have learned this. People have learned what Martin Luther King taught, learned what Gandhi taught, learned what Jesus taught, and through the millennia, I don't know how many, but I'm sure there were hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who in their quiet way in life have learned, and maybe millions, and maybe learned a lot. And we have seeds of all of that within us. So when we are faced with problems that make us want to vent, instead of either dumping on someone or imploding, and now I'm getting back to the depression that I started to talk about before, because depression is depressed energy. And as I said, there's reality-based depressions because you're injured. Somebody harms you. There's an injustice. It hurts. You're physical. You're an animal. You're a living being. Your biology will protest. It will say, do something. It will make you angry. It will make you sad. It will implode. It will explode. And part of our maturity is learning how to even trust that problem, how to convert. And you know, this is the secret. This is so important. This is the secret, how to convert that pressure, that energy, into something that expands us, that heals us, that brings in a new creativity. And that's the problem and wonder at the same moment, because we are kind of stubborn, old-style thinkers. We like to keep it familiar, and we want to find the solution to our problems within the realm of what we already know. If you keep yourself ignorant, or others keep you ignorant so that they can fool you more easily, like corporate media or something like that, well, you know, then we lose the wherewithal collectively. There's a personal way we do that, when we avoid learning, avoid facing ourselves, avoid looking at things, almost always because it's painful to look at how someone has inexcusably harmed us, feels so humiliating, so painful. This is what hurts children. This is what causes us to have wounds as adults. It's just too terrible. We don't want to remember it. We don't want to think about it. We want to get over it. Now, some part of that's okay sometime, as long as it's not too much of a habit, too much, because if you keep doing that, you'll end up getting depressed. Depressed is depression of energy. There's a time to make light of something and let it go, because it really, on the scale of everything, doesn't really matter that much. And it is that true realization that you earn through thinking about it that sets you free. It's not just covering it over and trying to make nice and pretend it's all okay, which is okay, because sometimes it'll even work, and sometimes it'll just backlog on you until you get depressed, and then you have to face it. But what I'm really trying to describe is what we're doing, what we're breaking through, the how-to, because there is a divine inspiration trying to quicken us, trying to wake us up as this formidable life form that has done a lot of work evolving to where we are. And we are still young, immature, unfinished, somewhat deranged, incompetent, wondrous beings. And we're on that growing edge. We're just really trying to get it going. And we need to support each other to do it. Sometimes you win big when you support someone. Sometimes it seems like you get no thanks at all, or even get stabbed in the back, maybe get robbed, maybe get harmed. But you know what? In the end, in the big picture, it has caused good if you do good. It always does. It's often part of a bigger process that you can't see from where you're standing. That's why people said, and sometimes it's used very gratuitously and dismissively, and that's what robbed it of its power. You know, God works in wondrous ways, his miracles to perform. I mean, it does work in wondrous ways, life and the universe and the life and movement of this planet, in this galaxy, in this incredible universe. And we are important. We do matter. Everyone matters. And we're all part of a huge synergistic dance to grow, to move, to wake up, to love, to bring love into life, to change it from just instinct level of animal life to the spiritual level of animal life, which is what we are. It's called the descent of spirit into matter. It is our bodies becoming the vessel, the temple of our spirits. And to see that in everyone, even people who are doing appallingly foolish, cruel things. But it's important to see and to say they are doing things that are appallingly foolish, but not hate them. It's important to say what's happening, but not be angry. And the miracle is that when you honestly say what's happening by having placed it in the proper perspective of everybody's growing, then you can say more, more bluntly, with no vitriol. Just say it, and it all falls where it falls. You know, people have plagiarized my work. John Gray, Wayne Dyer, Marianne Williamson used huge parts, used whole stories, used verbatim quotes, just, and they don't acknowledge it. Maybe someday they will. But they help spread some of it around, some of it well, some of it not so well from my point of view. But it still all fits, doesn't it? It hurt me. It made me sad. As any human being can understand, a life work being used and not only not acknowledged, maybe messed up a little. So that's my personal trip, you know. That's something I had to really realize. But when you come to the place where it really is part of a bigger solution, a timing, a time where we can all sort of say what's going on, when we can pray for the president to see himself, to withdraw the troops, to send in almost a huge peace corps to rectify the wrongs, to really think in helping and to stop worrying about oil companies and Halliburton and start really correcting the wrongs and have electric cars and hydrogen power plants, not hydrogen cars, which were incredibly dangerous and foolish, with hydrogen gas station type things, which are foolish, and a huge infrastructure to build that's dangerous. But a power plant run on hydrogen that's made from water and powered by wind turbines using and solar power, using solar and wind, the natural powers of this earth, the natural metabolism. Harness that to create the energy that we need. We would have clean energy everywhere, clean air everywhere, clean water everywhere, if we thought bigger. And if we used the problems and the hassles and just say the truth about them, not be so concerned about punishment. You know, people having to go through the process of facing themselves, you know, it's difficult. People have to go through it. It's not punishment, but it's the living edge, you know, it's life. And it's good for them. It's good for them to face what they're doing. It's good for you to face. It's good for me to face. It's good for us all. It makes us powerful. It makes us healthy. It makes us free. And I have another Lincoln quote big on my website. He says, "I have always found that mercy bears richer fruits than strict justice." And what he's really saying is that we need justice, we need honesty and fairness, but we need mercy, that justice is not an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. As Gandhi said, you know, I just find that leaves the world blind and toothless. And that's the Old Testament, that's the old rule. In simplistic terms, it's fair. But in spiritual terms, in godly terms, it's not fair, especially if it's just harmful. Now, that's why any kind of torture or cold-blooded murder, which is war and capital punishment, is cold-blooded, especially capital punishment. I mean, in California these days, they're having problems because doctors, it's against their oath to kill someone. So they have people who are not doctors killing people, executing them, killing them. They're not doing it right. People are living in agony for half an hour because they're not doing it right. And it's just, I hear reporters on television talking like they're talking about, I don't know, the price of candy bars as they're reporting this. It's horrible. It's cold. It's cold-blooded. Cold-blooded murder means you don't even have fear in you. You're not even reacting out of the moments heat of anger. You're letting it get rancid. You're letting it get cold. Cold anger is very bad. We need to keep anger lighter on the surface and as an energy, as a warning, as a clue, as an insight, biologically saying, you are feeling violated. Figure out what's going on. Figure out how to help yourself. Figure out how to do it in a way that doesn't harm others. Those are the questions we need to ask to be grown-ups, to be healers, to be enlightened, to be awake, to being our best selves. And the stuck things are things we will not forgive, things we ourselves judge ourselves for so severely that we can't let go. We can't look at it, and so we project our anger out onto other people with a foolish, unwholesome self-righteousness that makes us hurt others. Not reveal, not heal, not make it healthy, but just hate. That's why there's hate radio everywhere in America right now, and in the Middle East, and in Europe. It's all over the world. These fascist-type governments, which are, and fascism was invented by Mussolini. It's corporate power. It's mindless. There's no soul. And I'm not making corporations evil, per se. They're organizations of people, though. And so, but if they're people who've given up their heart to the mindless dogma or ideology of the corporation, which is to make money. Doesn't matter if it poisons the earth, doesn't matter if it kills little children, doesn't matter, you know, if it causes cancer, doesn't matter. Really, you just want to sort of get away with it. Reduce it if it doesn't cost too much. But the focus is on the wrong thing. That's not mentally healthy. That's not political even. That's just common sense. And to try to turn it into some foolish political polarization of liberal and conservative is so silly, because there's wonderfully beautiful things about liberalness, which comes from liberty and love of freedom and respect for the person. And there's wonderful things about conserving, preserving that which is wholesome and good, and protecting the earth, which is what conserving used to be about. So we have to think about the core meanings of things, not think simplistically, not use ideological polarization to rile people up because people are fearful, but to do the reverse, to help people feel more calm, feel more justice, feel more heard, have more free speech. And thank God for the internet, because this radio show can be heard by anyone practically on the planet that's got, you know, a high-speed internet connection. We can communicate to one another. It's time. It's time we're awake. It's time we support with one another. It's time that it's not, you know, we talk about ego. And I hear so many people say, yeah, people are just so egotistical, or it's ego is the problem. Well, I have one of my degrees is in sociology with psychology as a major, and so my interest is psychological often, and my language sometimes is, though it's spiritual psychology that I'm interested in, and as I'm interested in spiritual politics and sacred action and spiritual enlightenment to our logic and to our lives. But one of the things that happens is that people make it be so literal, so needing to win and be right, that then people call it ego. And my version of ego is from the psychological background, which means your strength of personhood. So to have a healthy ego, not said sarcastically, but in clear terms, to have a healthy ego is to know you are good, know you're a child of God, be healthy, and be open-minded to look at life and to do the best you can with it. So having a healthy ego is a good thing. Having a big ego is a way of saying an inflated ego, which means a lie about yourself. Not an honest interpretation of yourself, but a grandiose, maniacal, megalomaniacal, I can't say the word, you know what I mean, that exaggerated grandiosity, which is compensation for feeling inferior and wanting to be good and wanting to be big and wanting to be loved. Many politicians do have this. You know, that's what we have now. And it takes humbling, and it takes being grounded more in reality and re-choosing. I just love what Al Gore said, that he was a recovering politician. When I think of how my work was stolen and used, I think of Al Gore. I'm awed. He's walking around, let alone achieving and creating. I can only imagine intuitively, empathetically, the despair of having won the election and having it taken away by someone like George Bush, who was not competent to be president. Totally not competent. It's not, I don't hate George Bush. I wish him well, pray for him every day, hope he heals, hope he grows. But it was all not an honest situation. And if we can't say that because, oh, somebody will say it's a conspiracy and we'll get ridiculed, it's like bullies in the schoolyard. Can't we be bigger than that? Can't we just say what's so? He had more votes. He would have won in Florida if all the votes had been recounted. He would have won. He had more votes nationally. So by electoral college or by popular vote, he won. That we want to be in denial about that. We don't want to face that we made such a big mistake, that we were so shallow, that we were so foolish, that we were so easily fooled. This is a great big archetypal situation. This is not even really a political situation. This is not about Republicans and Democrats. This is about thinking. This is about being grown up. This is about telling the truth. This is about seeing. This is about being a model for the world, about what democracy has to go through and what humanity has to go through to be grown up. And there's Democrats who don't tell the truth, who finagle, who squirm, who mislead. Of course, you know, it's most of the politicians most of the time. Not all the politicians, and not all the time. So it's up to us to delineate, to see, not to do gotcha on people, not to get ways of humiliating people or hurting them or punishing them, but we must get out of the secrecy. We must get out of the fooling ourselves mode. This is for our mental health as a nation. This is the same thing we need to do in relationships. It's the same thing we need to do in our families. We need to do in the workplace. We need whistleblowers. We need people who have courage, who come forward. You look at the Ingram studies, the psychological studies of how people just follow. You look at the Phil Zimbardo studies from Stanford, that they had to stop a two-week study. I think they had to stop it in 4.5 days because students were brutalizing other students by an experiment about how people treat prisoners and the psychology in our humanity and how everybody got wrapped up in it, and even the psychologists did, and they didn't stop it sooner. They didn't see it. They didn't see what was happening. They didn't see what was happening to them. This is a priceless study. This is something everybody should know about. Go online, the Stanford Phil Zimbardo prison study. It was amazing. There's a DVD out on it. I saw a television show on it again, a replay, apropos to our times now, about Abu Ghraib and prisons all over the world, prisons in America, We have more people in prison per capita than any country in the world. We're way worse than Red China. This is foolishness. This is punishing out of fear and out of not thinking, making people others. This is the breakthrough place for our spirituality. This is why religions have taught compassion and love and patience and looking and kindness and justice, because we need to live it. We need to be able to humble ourselves if we've been acting immaturely. We need to just say, well, I was doing that because I wanted to be president, or I wanted to be important and have people like me, and I wanted to be rich, and I wanted to have people think I knew what I was doing. This is what people are doing things for. But you know what? The mass of humanity is going to grow up faster than the so-called leaders, and everybody's going to start to become transparent because it's catching. Once you're not afraid to see, it's not only very hard to go back, it's close to impossible. That's why people hang on so hard, staying blind and in denial. The media in America is going to change. The media in Canada, in the European Union, in Australia, in South America, in Africa, in Asia, all around the world, in the Middle East, truth is going to start to be said more and more, and more people will hear it and calm down, forgive themselves, forgive others, and begin to just say the truth. Let the Spirit of God empower you. There is such a thing. It's love. It does heal. And you need to love you as much as you love and work to love other people. Because when you judge yourself so harshly for something you do out of your conditioning that was unhealthy, something you've done that you regret, something that you're too fearful to go back on, don't dare want to say out loud. Sometimes you don't have to say it out loud. You just have to correct it. You have to forgive it, understand it, and get on with life. Rectify the wrongs you've done to people by giving them respect, by giving them their due as you may and as you can. This is how we heal things. This is what we need to pray for ourselves, for each other, for our so-called leaders, who really are just figureheads acting out the lowest common denominator of what we're doing. And everybody's letting them because we're acting as though we have no power. We have power. We have the power to heal. We have the power to see. We have the power of love. We have a tremendous consciousness. And I know we're coming to the end here, and I want to remind you all, I will be giving talks like this. Trust the Problem will be on. It will be on my Suncast. And you find it at my website, patriciasun.com. Please log on. Please send me your email so I can tell you when I'm going somewhere or speaking somewhere or something's coming up. I really would love to be in touch with you and have a way to get in touch with you. This is a time when we do need to help each other. We do need to support what's good. We need to soften our hearts. We need to know we have the power at any time to bring love into ourselves. And the time you need it most is when you feel the least forgiving, the most angry. And I don't say bring in love to throw anger away, but to transform anger to its highest power, which is inspiration and action in an inspired way, in a way filled with courage. At the winter solstice in California, in Kensington, it's on my website, on the 21st of December, I'm going to do a workshop on creativity, and the path is going to become synergistic, that will make us creative in ways to solve problems that seem like dead ends and can't be solved. They can. They can, they will. We are going to do it. And it's time. It is so time. So I send you great love. Please log on to patriciasun.com. Here's some more talks in the future of Trust the Problem. And thank you, Contact Talk Radio, for having sponsored me and asked me to be on. I wish you all love, good luck, and Happy New Year. We'll be talking again. This is Patricia Sun, and Trust the Problem.